greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on credit cards and credit card fraud when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is terribly wrong with the Ten Commandments because they have been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we now see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they teach these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto to our children and our schools and our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. You know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 not only practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal Constitution. That's not separation of church and state. And there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law and the Ten Commandments and all of the 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that you receive for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is in order to suffer its effect. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law or the Law of God or Common Law or Natural Law or the Karma or something else, it's automatic. It's just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. And best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order one for yourself right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Hey, we've been talking about credit cards and credit card fraud, and people are really getting upset and they're getting uptight, and there's really worry going on in America about identity theft. And I mentioned the other day, so I'm not worried about identity theft. Nobody's going to steal my identity. And that's because there's no money in it. I mean, you can run around and steal George Gordon's identity and run around and pretend that you're me, but it's not going to gain you anything because I don't have any credit. So it isn't anything worth stealing. And people sometimes ask me about that, and sometimes, you know, they'll say, well, Mr. Gordon, would you fill out this form for me, or this or that, and I fill out the form, and I put no, none, and never, and they say, what's your Social Security number? Well, I don't have one. And I didn't want to know, well, do you have a credit card? No, I don't have a credit card. Do you have a check? No, I don't have a check. And they say, well, how are you going to pay this bill? And I say, with gold coin. And they look at you like you've suffered from the terminal stupids or something, but that's the way I do it. And because I do that, I'm following an ancient old-timey law that comes out of the Bible, of all places. It's called Thou Shalt Not Steal. It's one of the Ten Commandments, and it's supported by two statutes. One of them, in Leviticus 19:35 and 36, tells you not to have unjust weights and balances, and then another one, in Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16, tells you don't have any unjust weights and balances, and there's other places in the Bible that talk about unjust weights and balances being bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil. In fact, God calls them an abomination. There's some side effects that come from breaking laws. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but for instance, you don't need a policeman standing outside a Flo's whorehouse to give you a ticket or to give you a summons to come into court, you know, because you've been into Flo's place. The automatic natural penalty for adultery is venereal disease. It's just designed and built that way. You see, when you're driving down the highway, you're a criminal, and that's why you have that radar detector on your dashboard. You intend to break the law. You intend to speed. And so you know that if you speed and you get a ticket, you'll have to go in and make a payment. You'll have to suffer a penalty. And so you go into the judge and he says, well, I'm going to fine you $250 and $50 court costs. That's $300. And that's your penalty. And you don't want to pay that penalty. So you go out and spend a couple $100 and you buy a radar detector so that when you're breaking the law, speeding, the radar detector goes off. You slow down, you pass the cop, you speed up, and everybody's happy. Now, God anticipated that you would be a criminal, and he made an observation one time through the Apostle Paul, I think it's in Romans 8, verse 3 or 5 or 7 or something like that, and it says, the carnal mind is enmity against God and isn't subject to the law of God, and neither indeed can be. So you were designed to be lawless, and you are, and that's why you practice these criminal activities, and then you suffer a penalty. Now, identity theft is the penalty that you pay for a violation of the law. You're breaking a law here, and that's why you're suffering a penalty. Now, you suffer penalties in two ways. One, some thief is going to steal your identity and run up a $14,000 bill, as we saw a little earlier in this series, or the bank is going to charge you 27% interest, and you're going to be in the compounding cycle, and you're going to pay one or two or maybe three times as much as you borrowed. In other words, you can max your card out at $10,000, start making the minimum payments, and you'll pay it off in 25 years. And remember that the interest doubles the principal under the rule of 72 about every 5 years. And so, you know, if you took six cycles of 5 years to pay off a $10,000 debt, you'd be paying something on the order of $50,000 or $60,000. You borrow $10,000, borrow it for 30 years, and then pay back $60,000. Now that's a penalty. You don't get rich by buying something for a dollar and then paying two for it. That doesn't make any sense. You get money when you buy it for a dollar and you sell it for two, and that's what the bank is doing to you. But then there's a third penalty. Penalty number one is identity theft. Penalty number two is the usury that you pay. But penalty number three is the taxes, the income tax that you have to pay on the income that you make in order to use the credit cards. The income tax, boys and girls, is a penalty. Now, the other day, I received, just yesterday, as a matter of fact, I received a letter, and it's just a sample letter that I get quite often from people that ask me, well, Jesus paid taxes, and so why don't you? And so, oftentimes, I respond to these emails, and I say, well, Jesus didn't pay taxes, and can you tell me where in the Bible it says that Jesus ever paid any tax? And then that's all I ever hear from people, because they can't find it. Now, there is two places in the Scripture, in the Bible, in fact, they're both in the New Testament, that talk about taxes. The first one is in Matthew chapter 17. And the second one is in Matthew 22. I believe it's 22. Let me flip over here and see. Yeah, Render to Caesar, chapter 22. And in neither case did Jesus pay a dime's worth of tax. And oftentimes people will read those scriptures, and it just goes to show you what a public school education will do. They read the words, and then they come to an erroneous conclusion. It's what we call in law assuming facts, not in evidence. So if you got a Bible in front of you, let me direct you to that. But listen to this letter. A lady wrote me a letter, and she said, "Mr. Gordon, I just wrote a book about how the government of the United States is now a corporation. Under FDR in 1933, simplified version to save space. And in this book, it gives legal ways, to never pay taxes again, as well as to prevent the IRS from confiscating your goods forever." Well, my question is this. If Jesus taught, "Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's," tax money, is this idea of stopping the IRS from thieving contrary to this law? On the surface, it appears simple, pay your taxes. But by paying into this debt credit usury system, which we have today, have we not created, are we not adding and abetting the thief in the stealing of our money, our property? So what's the best way to not be aiding and abetting in this crime? And so I looked at that, and that's a sample of many letters that come in here concerning taxes and one thing and another. And so I thought, well, let's read these two scriptures over here on this taxes over here, because credit cards play a very significant role in your tax liabilities. Very significant role. It's the prima facie evidence that you had income. Otherwise, how did you spend? How did you pay? And when you make your payments on your credit cards, you're paying in Federal Reserve notes. The bank doesn't take gold and silver coin, boys and girls. They don't take wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. They don't take just weights and balances. The bank charges you in commercial paper, which is prohibited in the scripture. Now, if God prohibits unjust weights and balances, and if, in fact, credit cards and Federal Reserve notes are unjust weights and balances, then aren't you breaking a law? And if you're breaking a law, what's the penalty? Well, I just outlined it for you. Three penalties. Identity theft, number one. Usury by geometric progression, number two. And the income tax, number three. Those are the three penalties that you pay for using those credit cards. I say that the cost is too high, that the penalty is too great, in order for me to justify having a credit card. Now, I'm just as big a criminal as you are. I mean, I'm not a saint by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, my common sense says that if I went out and I got a traffic ticket and I went and I paid a $300 fine, and then I went out and I got a ticket and I paid a second $300 fine, then I went out and got a third ticket and I paid a third $300 fine, you know, pretty soon these $300 fine starts to add up, and you wake up and you say, gee, I either got to slow down or I got to buy a Fuzzbuster, now one or the other. I got to do something. Now, most people don't put two and two together and figure out, oh my God, I got identity theft, 21 ways to steal from me on my credit card and leave me strung out paying a $15,000 debt. So, you know, how do I solve that problem? Get rid of the credit card. Nobody's going to steal your credit card if you don't have one. Nobody has ever stolen my Rolls Royce. I never had one to steal. And unless you got a Rolls Royce, you don't ever have to worry about somebody stealing your Rolls or your Bentley if you don't have one. Now, of course, most people, they got to have one. So the lady wants to know, so let's take a look at the first place here. It's in Matthew 17, verse 24. "And when they were come to Capernaum, they that received tribute money," the tax collectors, "they came to Peter." They came to Peter. Read that again. They came to Peter. They didn't come to Jesus. Jesus isn't involved in this transaction. They came to Peter. "And they said to Peter, 'Does your master," referring to Jesus, "pay tribute?" The tax collector asked Peter, "Does Jesus pay tribute? Does he pay tax?" And Peter answered the question. And he said, "Yes, yes, Jesus pays tax." Now, when Peter was come into the house, Jesus, anticipating what was being said and what had happened, said, "Well, what do you think, Simon? Of whom do the kings of the earth take custom or tribute? Of their own children or of strangers?" Jesus is talking to Peter. He said, "Hey, Pete, I saw you talking to the tax collector out there." And he asks Peter this question. He says, of of who? Which group of people do the tax collectors collect taxes? From the children or from strangers? And Peter said, well, he collects them from strangers. Peter said to him, of strangers. And Jesus saith unto him, then are the children free? Well, somebody's free of paying the tax, aren't they? We don't know who that is yet, but somebody's free and somebody's obligated to pay the tax. Now, evidently, Peter must have thought that Jesus was a stranger and not one of the children, because he said, oh, yeah, my master pays tax. Now, either he was lying, you know, a lot of times, hey, have you paid your taxes? Oh, yes, I've paid my taxes. Now, you haven't, but you lie about it. I don't know whether Peter was lying here. This is a story about a conversation that occurred, so we don't know what was going through Peter's mind. But we do know what Peter said. We know what he said to Jesus, and we know what he said to the tax collector, because that's reported here. So now Jesus says in verse 27, well, notwithstanding, nevertheless, in spite of all of that, lest we should offend them, Peter, you go to the sea and cast in a hook. Take out a fish that first comes up, and when you have opened his mouth, you'll find a piece of money. That take and give unto them for you and for me and for you. Who paid the tax? Twarn't Jesus, boys and girls. Jesus told Peter, you opened your big mouth, sucker. Now we got to solve this problem. Because if Jesus had paid that tax, then he would have had another god in front of or in place of the creator of the earth, the creator, his father in heaven. He would have been practicing idolatry. Paying the income tax to the United States of America is idolatry. It violates the first commandment. Paying an income tax to the state of California violates the first commandment. Now, of course, that's a choice that you have to make. Most people would prefer to pay their taxes to the state rather than make Caesar mad at them, or rather than be one of the free children, one of those that doesn't owe the tax because he doesn't receive the benefits. I'll cover that here in a minute. But then I want you to notice here in verse 27, again, notwithstanding, lest we should offend them, you go to the sea and cast in a hook. Where'd they get the money? It didn't come from anybody's labor. It wasn't Jesus' property. It wasn't even Peter's property. The coin was in the fish's mouth. This is a miracle that needs to be performed in order for Jesus to obey all the laws all the time so that he doesn't offend the state now that Peter has confessed that, yeah, my master pays taxes, which he didn't. And his obedience under the first commandment to God Almighty, that he not have another God before the God of creation. So they got the money out of a fish's mouth. Peter paid the tax. Jesus didn't. That's number one. So let's not assume facts, not in evidence. Jesus never paid a tax there. In chapter 22, there's a neat story over here. It's called Render Unto Caesar. And tax collectors will tell you this to this day. Jesus says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar. Well, let me come along and second the motion. I think all you people out of there should render unto Caesar that which is Caesar. Now, why do you owe Caesar anything? Why are you taking benefits from Caesar? There's a story back in Genesis where Abraham went out and he fought with the king of Sodom against some wrestlers. And when he got all through with the fight, there was a battle went on, a little small war. And when he got all through, the king of Sodom said to Abraham, he said, well, listen, let's divide up the spoil. And Abraham said to the king of Sodom, no, no, you can have it all. I'm not going to divide any spoil with you. I don't divide up with kings. I don't make contracts with kings. I make my contract with the God of heaven. Now, there's the example. We don't take anything from government, and we don't owe anything to government. And that's what we get from Hale versus Hinkle. That's what we see in Diefendorf versus Goliath. So let's take a look at this render unto Caesar. Here's what it says. Then went the Pharisees, and they took counsel how they might entangle him in his talk. So the Pharisees are lawyers, and they wanted to cross-examine Jesus and see if they couldn't they couldn't get some evidence out of his own mouth against him so that they could prosecute him. These were not his friends now. And so they went to him, they sent out unto him their disciples with the Herodians, saying, "Well, Master, we know that you're true, and we know that you teach the way of God in truth. Neither carest thou for any man, for thou regardest not the person of men. Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to give tribute unto Caesar or not?" You know, people will ask me that. Well, now, Mr. Gordon, is it lawful for us to pay taxes? Shouldn't we be paying our taxes? Isn't that what this lady is asking me? Well, now, Mr. Gordon, what are we going to do here? The government says we've got to pay taxes. The government says you got to pay taxes. Verse 18, Jesus perceived their wickedness, and he said, "Well, why do you tempt me, you hypocrites?" So the first thing he called them was something other than a white man. He called them hypocrites. And he said, "Well, show me the tribute money. Show me the money that you're talking about." And they brought unto him a penny. In today's parlance, they brought unto him a $20 Federal Reserve note. And he looked at the money, and here's what he said. "Whose image and superscription is upon it?" And then they said, "Caesar's." Today, I would say to you, it says very plainly on the face of the note, Federal Reserve note, whose note is that? It tells you very plainly. I know, you reach in your pocket and you pull out some of these bills and you say, "These are my bills. This is my money." No, it's not. It doesn't have your name on it, but it does have the owner's name on it, and the owner is the Federal Reserve. And says very plainly on there, Federal Reserve note. That's not United States currency. It doesn't even belong to the United States government. It belongs to a private bank. Go read the Federal Reserve Charter. It's in Title 31 of the U.S. Code. Now, in verse 21, they said unto him, "Caesar's." Then he said to them, "Well, then render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things which are God's." And when they heard these words, they marveled. And then they left him and they went their way. Now pay attention here, boys and girls, because here's the answer. Very, very plain. All of you people out there that deal in credit cards and commercial paper like Federal Reserve notes and mortgages, you're dealing in unjust weights and balances, and you should render unto the Federal Reserve that which is the Federal Reserve's. Their Federal Reserve notes. And they got their charter from the Congress of the United States of America. And the United States of America is a corporation which is in league with or in partnership with a second corporation called the Federal Reserve. And if you want to do business with the United States of America and with the Federal Reserve, then you ought to render unto your God that which is your God's property. Now, are the children free? There are some of us out here that don't participate in these free lunches and these benefits. We don't take Social Security and unemployment insurance. There's 108 benefits under Social Security. We don't take any of those benefits. In the same way that Abraham said, "I don't take any benefits from kings." And that's because if you take the benefits, then you owe something called reciprocity in return. Now, the Federal Reserve note is an unjust weight and balance against the law. But if you're going to deal in Federal Reserve notes, boys and girls, then you got to pay the income tax. I mean, it's just that simple. And it deals with a thing here called property. So let's take a look at a case called Diefendorf versus Goliath. Let me give you a little understanding. Because in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away from us and left us with the Federal Reserve notes. That's all we had to do business with. And so everybody took up the Federal Reserve notes, and they went out and they bought, sold, and traded in Federal Reserve notes. 2 years later, he gave us the Social Security Act. That's a contract that you voluntarily sign up for so that you can pay the income tax. In 1942, he gave us a tax act called the 1942 War Withholding Tax Act. And then in 1944, the Withholding Tax Act was repealed, but they left the income tax in place. And the income tax is voluntary.
And you volunteered when you got a Social Security account. And you volunteer when you use commercial paper, like unjust weights and balances. But there's another side to the story. If you would deal in private business and property instead of public business and commercial paper, you'd be one of the children that is free from the tax. Now, this lady makes this observation. She said, I read a book. And it gives, in the book, it gives ways, legal ways, and she has a question mark after legal. I don't know. I didn't read the book. I don't know if these ways are legal or not. A lot of people are writing books and selling $75 packets that are as crooked as a dog's hind leg, but then I don't know about those. I didn't read them. I'm not advocating that. I don't advocate paying the income tax. It's a criminal activity. But if you're going to deal in a criminal activity, well, then you got to pay the penalty. And the income tax is the penalty that you pay for the criminal activity of using commercial paper, unjust weights and balances. If you'd use gold and silver coin, you wouldn't know the tax because you'd be dealing in property. And property has never been assessed or taxed as income in the United States of America. Never. All right, now let's take this. From Diefendorf versus Galay, which is cited at 51 Idaho, 619. When we get to page 626, we read income is defined as something which is derived from property, from labor, from skill, or from ingenuity or sound judgment, or from two or more in combination. So if you want to know what income is, here it is. Income is something. Now that you know that income is something, we find on page 628, or is that 623? Can't quite read. I think it's page 628. The same meaning appears to have attached to the term property in all subsequent taxing legislation and in the taxing practices of the executives, and we take judicial notice that income as such has never been assessed or taxed as property in the state of Idaho. Boys and girls, property isn't being taxed. Property is exempt from taxes. Property is something that you own. But you know, since 1935, we Americans haven't owned any gold. No, sirree, Bob. In fact, what you're dealing with is commercial paper, which is why you can't pay your debts at law and you discharge your debts in equity, for which it's a privilege or a service, just like going bankrupt is a privilege or a service for which you have to pay a fee. And the fee for the use of commercial paper, unjust weights and balances, is the income tax. That's one of the three penalties that you pay. Credit cards, boys and girls, aren't good for you. They're a curse. There's a penalty, and you're paying three penalties every time you use one of those things. But there's more to the story. Income is necessarily the product of the joint efforts of the state and the recipient of the income, the state furnishing the protection necessary to enable the recipient to produce, receive, and enjoy it, and a tax thereon in the last analysis is simply a portion cut from the income and appropriated by the state as its share thereof. Boys and girls, that's a partnership. That's a partnership. When you get your Social Security number, you became a partner with the state. And as a partner with the state, you owe the state, you have to render to the state, you have to render to Caesar that which is Caesar's. And Caesar says, hey, you want to be my partner? Here's the terms and conditions. Partner? I don't want to be a partner with the state of California. I don't want to be the United States of America's partner. I don't want to be partners with France or Germany. I want to be partners with the creator of the universe. I want to be one of the children that's free. Now, I have to pay a tax. I don't want you to think that I don't pay taxes. God has a tax. It's called a tithe, T-I-T-H-E. He wants 10% of the net profit that comes from, 10% of the increase that comes from my activities operating on the land, labor, and substance that he gave me. So I tithe. I do not pay an income tax. Now, you can do one or the other. I mean, you can obey God, keep His commandments, and pay Him His tithe. Or you can disobey God, and you can obey the God of the United States, and then you can pay the United States the income tax. But I always figured that 17 to 42% income tax is greater than 10% tithe. And being a greedy pig, like I am, I figured I'd rather pay 10% to God than 40% to the state. Now, that's just me. Most Americans prefer the income tax, as is evidenced by the elections of 1992 and 1996, when all of you Americans had a choice. A flat tax, which is the equivalent of a tithe. Everybody gets taxed the same amount. Or we can have the heavy progressive income tax, which is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, coupled with the Social Security tax, which is the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto. And Americans chose the second and eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto over a flat tax or tithing. Now notice this again. Income is necessarily the product of the joint efforts of the state and the recipient of the income. It's your joint efforts with the United States of America, boys and girls, that creates this income. And income is a crime. Income violates the law of God. You ought not to have any income. It's bad for you. But I'm not here to tell you how to live your lives. I'm just a reporter. I'm just here to give you facts. Now, the state furnishes the protection that is necessary for you to enable you, the recipient, to produce, receive, and enjoy it. So you doctors and dentists who have your professional licenses and your monopolies that are guaranteed by the state, owe the state their profit, their product, their share thereof, because they provide you a service. You want a monopoly? You got to pay for it. Doctors have a monopoly, dentists have a monopoly, and you have to pay for it. That's why you have these professional licenses. I don't have any letters after my name, and I don't have any professional licenses. And a tax thereon, in the last analysis, is simply a portion cut by the state and appropriated by the state as its share. Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. When we come back after the break, we'll take a look at, well, how could we do business without being a friend of Caesar? But I've got to give you a reminder here in order to keep us out of trouble. So let's remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications so endorsed or recommended will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management or staff of this network, or a local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. And a reminder that we're offering a new class on health and healing, which covers the alternative methods used or being used for the treatment and healing of cancer, also known as the botch of Egypt, or the botch of Egypt, also known as cancer, which now affects about 50% of Americans. And how to prevent degenerative diseases, and how to use the application of essential oils, super nutritional foods containing more nutrients and fewer calories. And the class also includes hands-on teaching, paperwork, allergic reaction testing, and training. So you can do this at home. Acupressure application and training, so you can find the pressure points, and much, much more. Class is coming February 5th through the 9th. This is February 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, 5-day school here in Isabella, Missouri. If you're interested, then give my wife, Jackie, a call. The number to call, 417-273-4967. All right, now I mentioned to you that property hasn't been assessed or taxed here in the United States. Franklin Sanders wrote a neat article on numismatic coins, and I wanted to share a little bit with you here and show you that when we use gold and silver, raw gold is gold that is taken out of the ground or a stream bed and which hasn't been worked in such a fashion so as to make coins, whether government or private, or jewelry. It's found either in what we call flakes, dust, or nugget form, of which nuggets are usually the preferred form, insomuch as they are often used in jewelry. This raw gold generally ranges from 69 to 85% pure, no matter which form it's in, and while there are exceptions to this rule in both directions, they are so rare that they'll not be considered. Gold dust trades at 75% of spot as a general rule. Nuggets, however, will oftentimes sell for considerably more. For example, a 1-ounce nugget can bring double the spot price or more, and a 4-ounce nugget may bring in $5,000 or more, as such nuggets are rare and highly desirable. However, you must be quite cautious when dealing with raw gold, particularly in nugget form, as many unscrupulous individuals try to pass off bronze or other metals as gold. So when a nugget of gold is viewed using a 10-power loop, a number of small craters, rather like what we would see on the moon, become visible. This is a test of its quality, as gold placed in a nitric acid bath will not react, but any other metal placed in such a nitric acid bath will have an immediate reaction. It starts bubbling and frothing. And if there's just a small fizz for a second or two, which rapidly dies off, it usually means you have gold which had a few imperfections in it. If there's a continuing fizzy reaction like Alka-Seltzer, you've got something else, and whatever it isn't gold. Raw gold is not taxed until it is sold or otherwise denominated in Federal Reserve notes. Thus, it makes sense to use it even if one is only receiving 75% of spot price, as one will not have to pay taxes on it unless one makes the mistake of doing so in such a fashion that it will be denominated in Federal Reserve notes. Now, that's just a fact of law. Raw gold isn't taxed, not taxed until it's denominated in unjust weights and balances called Federal Reserve notes. I've often marveled that gold miners in Alaska, who report to me that they found this gold, went down and they traded it in and got their bank accounts and then had to pay taxes. I said, why don't you, when you want to spend it, why don't you take it down like the old timers used to do and weigh it out when you want to buy a drink at the bar, weigh it out and pay the guy for a new backhoe, just pay him in raw gold. Why don't you people deal in raw gold? Like when I was a kid in Fort Bragg, California, they still had a gold scale in the general store, and they were still taking gold in their raw gold in 1945. How come you don't do that yet? Well, because the government came along and gave you the gold card from Visa. You know, they gave you credit cards and Federal Reserve notes, and you people went to public schools and learned how to use them, and now you don't know how to use property anymore. Now, boys and girls, the reason that your government took your gold away from you in 1935 was so that they could tax you with the income tax. That was the purpose behind it. And they succeeded beyond their wildest expectations. Today, you can't find one person in 100 that knows what the hell to do with gold if you hand it to them. They haven't got a clue. They look at you like you're from a foreign planet. Now, our old friend Franklin Sanders wrote an article on what is a numismatic coin, and there was a couple of neat stories in here, and I got to share them with you here. And the following article first appeared in the July 1996 Money Changer, and it's entitled, What is a Numismatic Coin? What is a numismatic coin? Now, he starts off, he says, the following article appeared in 1996. Numismatic coins are exempt from government seizure by law. That's totally false. No basis in statute or regulation that says that the government cannot seize numismatic coins. They haven't in the past, but it doesn't mean that they can't pass a law in the future. Number two, customer purchases of bullion gold coins must be reported to the government, but numismatic coins don't have to be reported. That statement is totally false. No report is required when you buy gold, regardless whether it's bullion or numismatic. And Franklin Sanders published this article because of these false, misleading pieces of information that are passed out by oftentimes gold dealers in their attempts to sell you gold numismatic coins at highly inflated prices. Now, you know, I'm not here to sell gold. Don't send me any money. I'm not a gold salesman. I don't sell gold. I'm a reporter. And I'm suggesting that you get this article from Franklin Sanders so that you can get the straight skinny and the lowdown, because gold isn't reportable and gold isn't taxed. That's the bottom line. You know, you go down to the bank and you take $10,000 out of the bank and you got a reportable transaction. You don't have a reportable transaction when you got $10,000 worth of gold. Although there are people running around telling you that you do. So let me give you a couple of factors in here. In this section, he says, Big Brother wants to know. So I'm going to read some sections out of here. And he says, building its grid of government control, the IRS in the 1980s began to introduce, number one, information reporting, that's a broker reporting, and two, cash transaction reporting requirements, which is called cash reporting. That was back in the 1980s. Broker reporting applied to a wide number of transactions, but those that concern us are commodities. That included any personal property for which the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, the CFTC, was approved trading in futures contracts, among others. Gold, silver, platinum, palladium, and U.S. 90% silver coins. But don't let this confuse you. Sales to customers aren't reported. Only certain purchases from customers are reported. And I repeat, and I haven't found any requirement in the law that anyone must report precious metal sales to customers. So when you go to a gold broker and you buy gold coin, that's not reportable. And if you've got a gold broker or a dealer that's reporting your transactions, you need a different broker. He doesn't understand the law. Specifically, according to Revenue Procedure 92-103, dealers need only report purchases from customers which could satisfy a futures contract. Now, when you go in and you sell the gold to the broker, it may be reportable, not always, but it may be. Why? Well, because he's paying you Federal Reserve notes. When you convert gold into Federal Reserve notes, hey, boys and girls, you're starting to get into unjust weights and balances. Hey, kids, when you get into unjust weights and balances, those are reportable at transactions. Go back to Diefendorf versus Goulet. You know, the government is taxing your income. They're not taxing your property. Property's never been assessed or taxed here in the United States. I can't speak for Canada and Australia and New Zealand. Now, I don't know about you people out there. I've got the facts on that one. But here in the United States, and I would suspect that in Anglo-Saxon administration, in any Anglo-Saxon country, any Israelite country, we follow that same rule which derives from the common law. And that common law derives from Moses at Mount Sinai. Going on, it says lots of 25 or more, but not fewer, Krugerrands, make-believes, or Mexican onzas, or ounces. Kilo gold bars, 100-ounce gold bars, 1,000-ounce silver bars, and $5,000 face value, five-bag lots, not $5,000 worth of U.S. 90% silver coin and 50 ounces of platinum or 100 ounces of palladium. Boys and girls, there's a whole host and plethora of gold coins that aren't reportable and don't have anything to do with reporting requirements. And if you'll go to Title 31, Section 5101 through 5112, it'll tell you exactly which coins those are and are being minted every day of the week. Those aren't reportable. Those are common U.S. gold and silver coins that are used in trade, commerce, business, and industry, and is used as private property and a store of value to this day. Lawful tender and the legal money of the United States of America. And you Canadians, Australians, have it also. You've got legal tender gold coins. Here's the cash reporting quirk. Cash reporting, as opposed to broker reporting, is a hog of a different color. Cash reporting requires certain entities to report receiving cash in amounts greater than $10,000 or $3,000 in some circumstances. For this purpose, the government isn't interested whether you're buying precious metals or manure, only that you plunked down cash when you bought it. The cash reporting requirements of 26 United States Code 6050-1 supposedly have companion regulations at 26 CFR Part 1, Section 6050-I-1C-7I. But note that the word cash has a special definition in this law. In a December 30, 1993 letter, the IRS Assistant Chief Counsel for Income Tax and Accounting, his name is Vincent Cardella, wrote to the Industry Council for Tangible Assets, it's called the ICTA, as follows. He said, quote, Section 1.6501-1C1 of the Treasury Regulations defines the term cash, in part, to include the coin and currency of the United States or of any other country which circulate in and are customarily used and accepted as money in the country in which they're issued. The term cash does not include bullion coins, such as gold bullion coins issued under the Gold Bullion Act of 1985, cited at 99 Statute 1117, nor does it include commemorative coins, such as coins issued under the Statue of Liberty, Ellis Island Commemorative Coin Act, 99 Statute 113 in 1985, called the American Liberty Coin Act. Right, now, did you get that, boys and girls? But gold and silver eagles, that is, American eagles, are, in fact, legal tender. So as crazy as this may sound, this means that you could walk into a Mercedes dealership, plunk down 200 American Eagle gold coins with a face value of $10,050 and a paper money value of $80,400, and it wouldn't be a reportable transaction. Got that? Now, wait, kids, don't try this at home. Repeat, even though the IRS Assistant Chief Counsel says so, don't rely on it. But it certainly appears that there is a hole in a cash transaction reporting law big enough to drive a 747 jumbo jet through it. And the simple way to avoid, not evade now, but avoid cash reporting is to use American Eagle gold coins and Silver Eagle silver coins in everyday business transactions. Crazier still, since customs is a part of Treasury, do you suppose that the American Eagle gold coins are exempt from reporting as cash when you leave the country with them? Now, I know this sounds crazy, but it's the government shooting themselves in the toe. They hate gold and silver because they want to discourage people from using it. They write it out of their regulations, but only succeed in making gold and silver more private than their phony paper money. And he says, I owe a hearty thanks for help researching this article to the Industry Council for Tangible Assets, the Trade Association for Gold and Silver Dealers. The ICTA has done a great job over the years fighting off Big Brother, and even precious metals dealers ought to join and support them. The ICTA, Box 1365, Severna Park, Maryland, 21146, and their hyphen 8365. Now, this article, again, comes from Franklin Sanders, the money changer. Remember, I mention him from time to time. If you need a telephone number, let me give it to you. I haven't read the whole article to you. I just took a couple of three paragraphs out here. I didn't have enough time. But you can get the full article here. It's 888-218-9226. Get a pencil out there, boys and girls. 888-218-9226. Last four digits. All right. Now, let's go back here to what did God tell us about these coins. He told us that he was going to give us the gold and silver in the hills. Gold and silver in the ground is property, and you apply your labor, which is your property, to draw the gold and silver out of the ground. Labor is not taxable until you get a social security number, and then you, by your own hand or mouth, contract with the government to give the government all of your labor for all of your life, and they promise that they will give you all of your necessities for all of your life. This is called the social safety net. That George Bush keeps telling you that you want the social safety net. Okay. Well, listen, kids, if you want the social safety net, well, get after it. But then pay your taxes. Now, if you think you might be able to live your life without this social safety net, like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, like Moses, and like our God directed us to do, if you think that maybe you might be able to do something like that, why don't you give it a thought? Why don't you give it a try? Then you can get rid of Social Security and stop dealing in income. You know, if you didn't have any income, you wouldn't owe an income tax, would you? I mean, if you didn't have any real property, you wouldn't owe any property tax, would you? Boys and girls, if you don't have a credit card, you don't have any identity theft problems, do you? I mean, you know, it's just cause and effect. That's why I suggest to you that you think about these penalties, because the credit cards have penalties. The use of commercial paper has penalties. Now, let me describe a penalty here for you. We here in the United States, you know, we laugh at Muslims and Buddhists and all these other crazies over here because we're Christians. And Christians are superior to everybody else in the world. And so everybody else in the world is a bunch of pagans. See? That's the way we view all of you people out there in the world. You're just a bunch of a riffraff and pagans. And that's why we send these missionaries out there to convert you poor fools into something more intelligent, more constructive. Don't ask me why we do that. I haven't got a clue. But it's in our psyche. It's in our genes here in America. I mean, we've just got to go out and save the world. That's why we send these missionaries out. We got this missionary zeal. Now, in our Bible, you know, we send these missionaries out, see, and these are religious people. These are Christians. And we send them around the world. But they don't teach circumcision, which the Bible teaches. I mean, our Bible, our God, requires circumcision. Now, Jews practice circumcision. Muslims practice circumcision. Many people around the world practice circumcision who don't have our Bible, don't practice our scriptures, but they practice that law called circumcision. Christians don't. Christians will tell you plainly, circumcision's nonsense and you don't have to do that. Now, Muslims don't do that. They do not look at their Quran and say, the Quran is nonsense and you don't have to do that. They don't say, our God is stupid and we don't have to obey him. I don't know of any Muslims that do that. Only Christians do that. Let's take pork, for instance. Now, Muslims don't eat pork. Jews don't eat pork. Christians eat pork. Christians are pig-eating Christians. That's why I call them pig-eating Christians. They eat pork. The Bible says don't eat pork. The Quran says don't eat pork. But Christians will tell you, yeah, but we don't have to follow that law. It's old and archaic, and on top of that, pork's got riboflavin and vitamins and minerals, and it's good for you. Even though, when you have a heart attack, the first thing the doctor does is take you off pig. Never seems to occur to us that maybe if we didn't eat pig to start with, we wouldn't have a heart attack to start with. Never occurs to us. But We Christians, you know, we run around the world trying to teach people about Jesus and him crucified. Jesus didn't eat pig, boys and girls. And he set us an example that we ought to follow. And for some reason, our God's stupid, and he's dumb, and he's out of touch with reality, and so we know more about diet than he does, and so we eat pig, and then we call all of those Muslims over there heathens. They don't eat pig. They follow the Quran. They don't call their God stupid and dumb. And then when we get down to these credit cards over here in usury, we Christians, we practice usury. Our Bible, our God tells us don't do that. The Muslims, they don't practice usury. I guess the Quran must tell them don't practice usury. I guess Allah must tell them don't practice usury. And they don't. But you know, we Christians over here. Now, I haven't seen any Muslim missionaries. I haven't had a Muslim knock on my door and say, hey, I want to convert you to Muslim theology. Not a one. I haven't had any Buddhists knocking on my door, you know, saying, hey, I want to convert you. But I get Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons and others, you know, they're knocking on my door, and they want to convert me. Convert me to what? Eating pig? Practicing usury? Is that what they want to convert me to? Lawlessness and crime? So that I can have my identity stolen and get ripped off for $14,000? Huh? That's what they want? They want to share unjust weights and balances with me so that I can go out there and pay the income tax and Social Security like everybody else? So I can participate in gun control? I mean, come on, kids, let's grow up and get real. Now, there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. That's just where reality is located. Now, when you violate the laws of the United States, nor the law of your state, California or New York or Texas or someplace, they got policemen out there, and God, they want to get you. Well, they want to haul you in here and fine you, throw you in jail, do all kinds of things to you. They want to straighten you out. That's what they want to do. They want to reform you. They want to get you to obeying the laws and practicing these laws. They want you to use unjust weights and balances. They want you to pay usury and interest. They want you to have a credit card. They want you to pay income tax. They want you to pay Social Security. It's good. Government fosters all of those criminal activities that violate the law of Moses and violate the law of God. They want you to participate in all of it. And I would say, well, all you have to do is tell them no. I mean, all you have to do is educate yourself to the laws of God. There's only 759 of them. I mean, hell, you got more traffic statutes in your state. Every state's got 2,000 traffic statutes or more. You've got more traffic statutes in your state than you have laws of God. God runs the entire universe on 759 laws, boys and girls. Hell, your state couldn't get you across town on 759 laws. So the moral to the story is you got a choice to make, and most people have made their choice. So if you have to have that credit card, well, then you need to protect yourself against these 21 credit card theft scams that are out there. You need to get out here and get busy. If you're going to have a credit card, you need to pay income tax and Social Security. Now, if you'd like to get free from that, why don't you call us here at the law school, and let's see if we can't set you straight, obey God, and keep His commandments. We used to do that in this country. It was Franklin Roosevelt that said that usury and interest is good for you, the year of release is bad for you, and we should have 10-year, 15- and 20-year mortgages. You didn't get that from God. You didn't get that from Moses. You got that from Franklin D. Roosevelt. All right, boys and girls, we're about out of time. I'm going to have to cut it off right about here and remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by pre-arrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desks. If you want more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.